Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music is on the air, and in your ear, once again, I am Martin, joined by the king of the casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, as usual, you get the privilege of introducing our fantastic guest.
That's right. Well, and it is a privilege. We have a wonderful, wonderful vocalist. She is the lead singer from Lizzie and the Makers. We have Lizzie. Lizzie Edwards, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're great. Happy to have you on the show. Loving the new stuff. Mermaid is, I think it's an awesome track. Super, super cool vibe. So we want to talk about that first. So let's talk about kind of how it came about and how some of the vibe started to come through.
Well, the original inspiration was drawn from an experience with a friend of mine who's also a singer. And at the time, she was taking the train all the way to the Rockaways every day just to swim in the ocean. She called herself a mermaid. She needed to commune with the salt water every day in order to have her chakras aligned and all of that stuff. And I was just kind of, you know, mesmerized by her and her spirituality. And we would hang out sometimes. And it's one time we hung out, she said to me, she's also very open with her sexuality, and said to me, "Lizzie, you know, I need to be ravaged on a daily basis. It's just the way I am."
Can I have her number?
I'm sorry. I mean, yeah, sure. After the call. But you know, and I just thought, God, this, I have to write about this, you know, my friend, this character. It's just, it's too inspiring for me to just let it go and not try to absorb some of this magical energy via creative process. So I sat down to write something and started out as this very slow, sultry blues song. You know, the verse was like, you know, "I need to be ravaged on a daily basis" and stuff like that. And I had some lyrics, but not a lot. And I brought it to my co-writer, Greg, who's our lead guitarist. And he thought, well, you know, this is good, but I feel like we need to move it a little more. It needs a little more energy. And at the time, well, and still, I love Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. And he said, why don't we give it a little bit of a Dap Kings kick, you know, and like pump it up a little bit. So that's how it got its kind of bouncy sound that you hear at the beginning. And that guitar riff, that was all Greg. So he recorded an instrumental track of that. And then it was just up to me to write the lyrics. And I had been going through a breakup, although I don't think the guy knew we were ever together, but I went to my favorite venue where all of this started at Pete's Candy Store and was listening to the track and just started writing and the lyrics come out. And I was, you know, there's certain words in there like two-hearted pale boy. I mean, I'm just looking at the Bell's two-hearted taps on the drafts in the bar and just kind of writing about the internal heartache while also reflecting on stuff going on around me externally, and then it just came out. So that's the short version.
That's the short version. Okay.
Yeah. And then we kept the title Mermaid, even though it's not about mermaids at all, just because of the original inspiration and the woman who is the muse behind the seed of the song. So yeah. Well,
so I think it's kind of competing with The Wrong Side from your first album. Is my favorite track you've done.
Thank you.
You know, I it's really dig it. I really dig your stuff in general.
Thank you.
I mean, it's in a world where people just want to, like, you know, categorize somebody in as one or two things, you're very difficult to do that with. there's a strong blues vibe through a lot of the music, but you know, I wouldn't call you necessarily a blues artist by any means. It's you're difficult to categorize, but I think that's a good thing for us as a listener. I don't know how good it is for the people who are marketing you, you know, but for us as a listener, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge we have on our marketing calls sometimes. Is what's your primary genre? Rock? I don't know. Blues? Indie? Roots? Who knows? It is hard to kind of put us in a box, but I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's always one of those cases, especially like when you get to listen to music like this, and you kind of pull out something. Like you'll just be listening, and it'll be like, oh, I get a little bit of Doors there, or ooh, I get a little bit of you know, like Black Crowes, or I get a little bit of Heart and all that stuff. You know, like there's just so much stuff to kind of latch onto, and it's not even like I'm suggesting that you're, you know, aping those in any way. It's just there's just little moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, our influences definitely show through in moments of our music. I would agree with that. But we try to have our own voice in the end, and not be too derivative, though all music is somewhat derivative. But
You're not, definitely. I mean, I like I say, I really dig it because it's the type of music at the end of the day, I can close my eyes, I can drift off to another world. You know, that's what it loves me, lets me do. And, you know, not every music does that. Some music is meant for different things, but I find that about your songs.
Well, thank you. I take that as a huge compliment.
So one of the things that I'm interested in, I mean, and there's a lot to go off of, but you talk about your friend and what a character she is. Like, do you know a lot of characters? And I guess, do you try to find musical inspiration from all of those things?
I do. I mean, a lot of my songwriting is autobiographical, but I do draw inspiration from characters living in New York City. I mean, you know, I have friends who are characters, but on a daily basis, I run into 5 to 10 characters. and it's part of what I love about living here. But also, I think it's important to try to get the perspective or understand the perspective of other people, you know, inhabiting the same square footage as you and not just write from yourself all the time. And so I do try to do that. And there's a lot of opportunity here for that.
Yeah, New York is always such a, you know, I mean, it's got such a vibrant music scene anyways, but it's always such a loom. It looms large in its ability to influence somebody, I think.
Yes, I'd agree with that. Growing up, I got to see all kinds of music, whether it was jazz or rock or classical. I used to go to the opera with my dad all the time. So, you know, there's that aspect of the musical diversity, but then just the diversity of the people who live here. It's really, I couldn't really live anywhere else, I don't think. I've tried, but I always come back here.
How hard is it then to try to make a go of it in New York?
Well, yeah, I was to quote Frank, right? If I can make it here, I can make it anywhere.
Make it anywhere, yeah, absolutely.
it's hard because there's just so much. There's so many bands, there's so many venues, and there's so much talent. So, you know, it's definitely a different challenge from being in a smaller town. Where you're not competing with as many people. But that being said, there's also a lot more opportunity. So I think the challenges just make me stronger and want to try harder. And, you know, eventually, if you try hard enough, you find your niche, your people, your venue. And I think, you know, we've gotten to that point. So the challenge is welcoming, but it is definitely challenging.
Well, I guess, too, part of it is that I don't necessarily think of your style of music and associate it automatically with New York. There's certain sounds that come out of New York where I'm like, oh, that's a New York sound. But
yeah,
yours isn't. So it's just like, I guess, did you ever think at some point, like, oh, it would help us to move to, like, Nashville or something, or Memphis to be, you know, more associated with the sound? Or is it like, no, we'd rather break the ground in New York?
I think we have thought about that. And actually, I think it was about 6 or so years ago, we did have a meeting at Atlantic Records, and their advice was move to Nashville as soon as you can. And it's just, I don't know, we all just love New York so much. And I wouldn't, my guitarist and I talked about it. I wouldn't want to do it without him because we write together and I love writing with him. But our band, too. I mean, our bass player, Brett, has been with us since the beginning, and it's just never the same when we play with other people. And so that's what's kept me. I mean, there are times when I think, God, I just got to get up and move and I'll find new players and it's fine. But it's not. What we have is so organic right now, and we understand each other musically so well. I don't know if I could do it, but we've definitely thought about it. And we've definitely tried to tour, you know, in Virginia and North Carolina and Austin. We've gone to South by Southwest a few years in a row. So we try to get out there, but it's definitely been a thought that I'm not willing to embrace at the moment still.
So with Mermaid being one type of sound, what else are we going to hear coming out from you in the next little while? Is it a completely different sound again?
Yeah, I would say our song, there are definitely different personalities associated with each song on this album. The next single, we're not sure exactly which one is going to be next, but one of them is a very dreamy, like, starts out jazzy song in 7, and then the chorus is just these roaring vocals, kind of AC/DC-like style. So it's a little more intense than the ethereal Mermaid. And we've got another song called Lover by Proxy I'm excited about, that has a heartbeat to it. It's kind of like a Black Crowes Southern rock inspired song. So I think, you know, you'll get some more dreamy stuff, some more hard hitting rock, some more blues inspired stuff, really kind of from one end of the spectrum to the other, but they all tell us a story that I think makes it a cohesive album when you listen to the whole thing. So.
Then, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Reeves Cabrel's, for sure.
Yeah.
And Mario J. McNulty also working on this. Now, how much influence did they have in, you know, kind of shaping you and assisting your sound?
They had a lot of their assistance was encouragement, I would say, more so than changing anything we had already brought to the table. And they really believed in us based on the songs they heard us perform live as is. So what they did was really add the missing link. It's like if you're making a cake and there's a missing ingredient, there's just one little thing missing. And I feel like that's what they provided. So Reeves would have suggestions on the solos, the guitar solos, and how those should build. Mario would have suggestions for me and my vocals and say, oh, well, you do this a lot. Why don't you try doing this? And so it was really the missing ingredient, but nothing changed too much, I think, from the original demos, which was nice because we had never worked with producers before. And the reason for that was because we didn't want anyone to really change our sound or try to make us sound like something we're not. So I think it was a perfect match. In that way. And Reeves and Greg have known each other forever. So I think that mentorship lends itself to the awesome guitar work on the album.
Yeah, I can definitely, you know, knowing Reeves' work, especially on Tin Machine and stuff like that, like I can sense some of just the style in Greg and just the, I guess, the willingness to try things, which I think
yes.
is awesome.
Yes, and I mean, I like to call it their alien sounds. Whenever there's something on a track and I listen to it, I think, what instrument is that and where did that come from? Greg's like, it's the guitar. And then Reeves rolls his eyes at me and I'm like, okay, great. You guys got this. I don't know. But we always like to maybe have our songs have a little familiarity to them or accessibility, but every now and then some unsettling noise or chord change that's unexpected to make it a little more bizarre and off the beaten path from what you would expect from a rock band or blues or whatever we are.
Well, yeah, because I definitely noticed like an evolution, you know, between Fire from the Heart of Man to Meanwhile. And so I think that, you know, especially adding them, like that evolution should continue. And I really like the evolution as it stands and where you're going.
Yeah, there's one track on the new album called Waiting for the Teeth. And it's a very ambient, spacey, weird, dark song. And I remember we played it once live a while ago, and our drummer at the time, just he didn't get it. He didn't understand it. And we thought, oh, maybe we're getting too weird or out there. And then when we met with Reeves and Mario, we showed them the song. And said, well, we had this song from 5 years ago that nobody seemed to understand. What do you think of it? And they loved it. And they were like, this is the most amazing song I've heard from you guys. We have to do it. So working with them has definitely encouraged us to step outside of our comfort zone and embrace the more ambient, ethereal stuff we want to do. And yeah, without them, I don't know we would have had the courage to do it. So that's really one of the best parts about working with them.
I kind of want to get an understanding of your background as a singer. When did you join your first band? Because from the notes we received, it said you were working as a music engineer before joining Lizzie and the Makers and forming the band.
Yes, that is correct. Even before that, I was in a band in college that was very short-lived. I was actually in a few bands in college that had a bunch of rehearsals and then never made it to the first gig because people fought or couldn't agree on a set list. But when I graduated from college, while I was in college, I had been to a few recording sessions and I thought, wow, you know, this is really something I'd like to learn how to do. And this is something I could get up for at 7 a.m, whereas class, not so much. 9 to 5 jobs, not so much. So I found a studio. I worked there as an intern. It's called Night Owl Studios. And I got lucky one day. They were recording a bunch of demos to shop around to other singers. And their vocalist canceled. And I was in the studio and I said, well, I can sing. You know, why don't you show me the tracks and I'll take a stab at it. And they loved what I did. And so for a while, I was not only learning how to work as a sound engineer, but I was working as a studio singer there. So that was a great experience. And then as far as the engineering, I worked as a live engineer at the Trash Bar and Pete's Candy Store for a couple of other one-off events. And it was challenging being a female sound engineer for a lot of reasons. And I kind of decided, wow, this is the most thankless job in all of live music. And then I got a job working in ticketing. And I was like, no, this is the most thankless job in all of live music. And, you know, that's when eventually I thought, you know what? I need to focus on the singing part and less on the other parts of live music, because that's what brings me the most gratification. And yeah, so I haven't really looked back at the ticketing or sound engineering in a while, but who knows? Who knows what the future holds?
If you're gifted with a voice like yours and you weren't using it, I would have been angry with you. I said, no, you got to get out there and sing.
A few people have been angry with me for that, so join the club.
Yeah, it does seem like a hell of a waste to be in a ticket booth.
Yeah, I know. My bass player used to make fun of me because he said, so this is how you get us gigs. You get a job at the venue, and then you beg them to book us. He said, why don't you just sing for them and don't take those jobs that make you unhappy? I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's probably a more direct route.
That's what life is. It's all about learning the most direct routes to get
right,
what you want.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So tell us about your songwriting style then, and just like the way you work with Greg and how that organic process that you have mentioned earlier.
So we never really sit down to write a song on purpose. Like we never have a session where the two of us get together and we think, okay, we've got to write a dancey song and it needs to be about this. And we have an hour to pump it out. Usually it sparks from one of us having some inspiration, whether it's Greg being in LA, looking at the mountains, coming up with a riff and sending it to me. Or if it's me waking up in the middle of the night from a weird dream, writing down some lyrics and jotting out a melody. So it all is kind of not forced, as you said, organic. A lot of times, most of the time, I would say Greg will have some musings on the guitar and send them to me, and then I'll listen, and whichever one I'm really drawn to, I'll start writing lyrics and a melody for. But there's another single that's coming out, one of the singles that's coming out, that literally, I mean, I think I went out in my neighborhood. I was in Bushwick at the time, which I felt very out of place in Bushwick. I felt like everyone's mom there. Like, I don't know. Not that I'm old, but it just, I don't know. And I was at a bar and had kind of a frustrating night. And so I came home and, a little tipsy, recorded this song in my voice memos and sent it to Greg at 1 a.m. And then the next day he said, all right, come over, let's flesh this out. And so we figured out the key and the chords, and then he'll always add a little something to make it less straightforward. You know, like I mentioned before, a little surprising element. So it's not just a blues, or it's not just a cookie cutter pop song. There's some weird, unexpected turn. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's usually how it works. And then once he and I are happy with what we've come up with, we bring it to the band, and we don't even tell them anything. We don't write a bass part. We don't tell the drummer what to play. We don't tell the keyboard player what to play. We just have them listen to it and play what they feel in it. And it, so far, it's worked out really well. So it's a very natural process. Unfortunately, you know, that means sometimes there are periods of drought, as with any writing. But I really find the best stuff comes out of natural inspiration and not kind of a forced meaning of, we're in the studio, we've only got it for a week, we've got to write 10 songs. I don't know how people do that. I would write the most unnatural stuff if I did it that way. So.
Now, when you are writing, especially if you're trying to put together an album, do like most all the songs that you write wind up on an album? Do you kind of have a stash of stuff that you may work on a couple years later or whatever? Or do you wind up with like 20 songs and it's just like, oh, we got to whittle it down?
We usually have a stash of stuff. There are definitely songs that we haven't recorded. For whatever reason, we decided it wasn't right for the album, and we'll forget about them sometimes and then later be like, oh, right, here are these 5 songs we haven't played in a while. Let's bring them back. And then sometimes I feel like it's good to take a break from a song and bring it back, and you have new ideas for it. Sorry, there's a school of children walking by me right now. it's a beautiful day here in New York City. But
it's probably time for you to use profanity then.
don't ask me twice. I think we're not. You know, I do have friends that are really prolific. Like, they'll have a stash of 40 songs, and then they just pick from those songs when they record an album. And I feel like we're not so much like that. We do, I'd say we have a stash of 5 to 10 songs that are on the back burner, but we really kind of write in the moment. And so the idea of, you know, writing 30 songs, I think we have more attention to detail and the craftsmanship of each song that we don't have time. I don't know where we'd find the time to have like 100 songs on the back burner. Cause we really, each one is very important to us. And we really painstakingly go through it to make sure we're happy with it. So we do have about 6 songs written for the next album already. So.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Do you ever think of, like, I guess the live element of the songs when you're writing it? Like, I mean, if there is like a saxophone or something on it, do you ever like consider that as you're writing, like how you'll play it live?
We really don't. We kind of just, you know, write in the moment, and then, I mean, a lot of times we'll play these songs live before they're recorded, and so I think, as we're writing it, we're not thinking about it live, but it takes shape as we're playing it live. And so it just works out. There is a song on this next record that Reeves Gabrels plays theremin on.
Oh, nice.
So that is definitely something I'm like, I'm going to have to bring the theremin out live now for this song and learn how to play it as well as Reeves does. So I think this is first with this album, we're now having to start to think about that a little bit. But not until now, we never really kind of wrote thinking, oh, well, we need the sax here. It just all kind of fell into place as we went along. And as far as what I can afford to pay my band. So
I suppose that would make a difference. Yes, I do. I love the theremin myself. Such a great instrument.
Yeah, it's really cool and weird. It's a funny story. I brought it to the recording session and thought, oh, we should try to put this on a song. And so we're recording the next single that's coming out, and I went to play it, and I thought I did a great job. And then Greg said, oh, no, I think I can do it better. And he was like, yeah, I did a great job. And then Reeves said, well, let me try. And he blew us both out of the water. And the theme for the rest of the session was, whatever you do, whatever instrument you play, Reeves can play it better. Just give up. Let Reeves do it. He's amazing. So, yeah, you get a little bit of Reeves theremin on the next single, which is cool. Yeah.
When you talk about an instrument like the theremin, like, where do you find the instruments? Like, are they just kind of sitting around and it's just like, oh, I'm going to take the theremin today or whatever? How do you do that?
Actually, my mom bought my dad a mini theremin for Christmas a few years ago. And he had it lying around, and he just, I think, got frustrated with it and was like, oh, it's too hard. I don't know what to do. And then when we had the session, I said, hey, Dad, where's that theremin? And I said, can I borrow it? And he said, yeah, just bring it back. And I was like, well, you haven't played it in 3 years, but okay, I promise I'll bring it back. So that was very coincidental. And when we recorded at this album at Mission Sound, I mean, that place has lots of random, awesome instruments there that we definitely took advantage of for this session. I think there was a lot of stuff Rob and Steve kind of saw him hanging on the wall, and they were like, oh, let me play that. Oh, let me try that out. So yeah, I guess stuff lying around, whether it's in the studio or in my dad's basement.
Well, it's funny. I was thinking back to what you saying, you know, you get the people in the band, everybody gets to play what they feel. And same thing with your lyrics. I mean, I imagine is it cathartic to kind of get these personal lyrics out there, or is it frightening to put it out there in the world, or what is it kind of the feel for you?
I think at first with the Makers, it was terrifying. I was afraid to bring any lyrics to Greg. I was afraid singing them live. I was too inside my own head. I was thinking, oh, people think this is terrible, or they're not going to get it, or I should just quit while I'm ahead. And then I got more comfortable with it, and I thought, oh, okay, I think I'm actually got a knack for this. And yeah, eventually it became very cathartic. And a lot of times I'll have a bad day and I'll say, Greg, we need to play a show so I can get my angst out somehow. So now it's definitely cathartic, but at first it was terrifying. So personal, you know, it's hard to know how people are going to react to your personal struggles or feelings.
I know for me, that would be the most difficult thing, would be to share that much truth about myself.
Yeah, I actually had an ex-boyfriend who broke into my Dropbox and went through all my lyrics and then sent me a message telling me how awful my lyrics were.
What a bastard. You're kidding me.
No. So that set me back a little bit, but then I was like, hey, he's a jerk. That means they're great. That actually means they're good. So.
Wow, I can't imagine how like that would feel. That's very. I don't know. It's wrong.
I think at that point I just rolled my eyes and was like, oh, dodged a bullet with that one. So moving on.
yeah, nothing good can come of this. That's for sure.
No.
So. One of the things, like, you talk about playing live and stuff like that, like, how important is the live element to your music?
So that's a great question. Because I do think, right, as opposed to going from the studio and trying to recreate that live, I do feel like our live performances really are their own animal. I mean, there's an energy that's palpable, and just the kind of communal, like, sense of musical expression between all of us, you definitely get live and not necessarily in the studio. And so I think for us, a lot of this album was trying to communicate that, you know, go backwards from the live element and try to communicate that energy through the studio recording. Because it's not necessarily the visual, I think, that is the source of the energy, but there's just something about all of us being there together. And it's also the relationship with the audience. I mean, you're in this together. You're feeding up their energy, they're feeding up your energy, and it just builds. And I think that's a really important part of our sound. And I'm trying to get more video out there so that people can see us live. But, you know, there's nothing compares to being in person at a show. And we all miss that right now, I think, through mm-hmm. this pandemic, and want to get back there really badly.
How much do you kind of get involved with the other aspects of the business besides the singing and the songwriting, you know, making the music video, the artwork for the albums, you know, studying the analytics and the streams and that type of thing? What kind of role do you play in all that?
I mean, I call myself the boss lady, I guess. I make pretty much a lot of the decisions and monitor mostly everything. We do have a wonderful manager, Anne Henningsen, who helps us with a lot of the analytics recently with this new album. but the artwork, I mean, I hire my friend Charlie does all of our artwork, and so that was all me. And as far as the booking and the music video, and I mean, I'm the boss lady, I sometimes forget that I have to sing too. It's a lot. But it's been nice with this album. We kind of decided, all right, maybe we should just put a little team together so that we have a little more support and it's not just me kind of doing everything, because it does get time consuming and exhausting. And you think, God, you know, I just want to write and play. And now I'm trying to post on TikTok 4 times a day, and I don't really know how those connect, but so yeah, I think up until recently I was doing the bulk of the management and business side of it, but we've now I've relinquished a little bit of control to other people.
Well, yeah, because it's so important. I mean, there's so much new music that you to try to get your voice heard. You have to work at that really hard. And so yeah. I can see that it would be such a difficult balance to be like, oh, I wanna get myself heard, but at the same time I'm this creative animal and I need to create and feel and have that urge, you know, checked off the box.
Yeah, it is hard. And I'm inconsistent with the business side. I'll be good one week and not so attentive the next week, and that's not good. So yeah, I think bringing in a team has helped a lot. But I still check up on them a lot. I still harass them and make sure they're doing their job.
The music video for Mermaid then really tells a succinct story. You know, I think it's really well put together then. So you had a real strong hand in that, did you?
Well, you know, actually, I had a strong hand in hiring the guys who did the video, Alpha Wave Studios. One of them is a singer as well, and we met performing in Loser's Lounge together at Joe's Pub. I actually had nothing to do with the story, so let me take it back. I don't do everything. But I trusted. I actually went to these guys and said, I need a music video. I definitely want to have some live performance aspect of it, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to music videos. What do you think? And then they listened to the song and came up with this whole storyboard and found the location. And so that was all them. Alpha Wave Studios in New Jersey, they're amazing. They get a little wild sometimes with their ideas, but I like that. They're never afraid to go too far. But yeah, that was all them, and based on listening to the song and kind of the visuals that they had from listening to it, the picture that was painted for them based on the song. So that was all them. I cannot take credit for that. I was just in it.
What did you think first time you saw it then?
I loved it. I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away. I'm kind of shy on camera. So throughout the whole thing, I kept saying to them, I'm like, please just make me not look awkward and uncomfortable. you know, there are several times where they would say, okay, look serious. And then halfway through, I would start cracking up. So I think I made their job harder, but they did a really good job. And I was really impressed. I think I watched the video like 20 times when they first sent it to me. Yeah.
Are you going to use them again in the future for other videos, you think?
Yes, absolutely. I actually texted one of them last week and said, we've got another single coming out. So let's get the cogs going and see what crazy ideas you guys have for the next one. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they have in mind and hoping I do it justice, whatever their idea is.
No, I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it after seeing how this one turned out.
Me too.
Now, you know, you talk about all the really cool people that you've worked with and stuff like that, and how you meet people like this and they give you these crazy different creative ideas. But like, I'm wondering, like, how often do you meet somebody who it's just like you think, oh, wow, you totally don't get it at all?
A lot, actually. That reminds me of, I've had some people that approach us and they say, oh, I want to manage you or I want to help you. And then they watch a show and they say, okay, well, you know, the band is good, but, you know, you're really a torch singer and you guys don't have any songs. And I'll go, okay, next. Sorry. See ya. Bye. One of my favorite stories is this actually the same guy. When Greg takes a guitar solo, I'll dance to the solo on stage. And he said to me, you know, nobody wants to see you dance during the solo. You should walk off the stage while he's soloing and then come back on. And I'm like, you know, first of all, we're not playing the Beacon. What stage am I going to walk off? Where am I going to go if I walk off stage? But I mean, there's been a lot of that. A lot of people that don't get our songs or our sound or don't see potential. You know, they're kind of more negative and want to change us as opposed to helping us grow. And that's, I mean, I would say that happened a lot until Reeves and Mario, who just got us. I mean, I think they're maybe the first people who really got us. We had a couple other people maybe we worked with, but yeah, they really just, we spoke the same language, I guess. So.
And make me a promise right now. You'll never change.
Okay. I promise.
All right. That's good. That's good. Cause at least I say, I really dig what you're up to. You know, I mean, it's funny. I can only see the music evolving and growing from here over the next several years, you know, because you came out, it seemed to me you came out with your voice already formed, fairly well formed. Mm-hmm. But I suspect we're going to see a whole other level on this next album.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm
really looking forward to it.
It's funny. I'm already excited for the next album, and this one hasn't come out yet. Funny how that happens. I'm like, yeah, this one's good, but wait till you hear the next one.
Well, but isn't that the right thing? You know, you should, I think it's always that hope that you want to be like, oh, okay, well, we just put this together, but I learned so much from doing this that now I can take that and create something that's even better. And you just want to continue learning and continue growing as an artist.
Yes, I do think so. And if at any point we stop growing or stop having fun, you know, I think that's a bad sign. So I hope we never get to that point. I don't think we will.
Never
famous last words, right? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, not when you're working in music. Always let it be real.
Right? Grow and evolve. That's the most important thing.
Evolve, but let it be real.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. It's like the conversation that we have a lot where it's just like, do you try to write for the radio or do you write for yourselves? And I think that the vast majority that we're talking to now, it's just like, people want, especially right now, people want to write for themselves more so than anything. And when you talk about the pandemic, I think that's only made that more obvious.
Yeah, and I think musicians, but also the listeners, crave authenticity right now. I think in a lot of ways, they're kind of, we're all over being lied to or being sold a bill of goods, and we want authenticity and truth and honesty and realness, as you said. And I think, you know, radio can take it or leave it, if you ask me.
Well, that's the thing. Nowadays, I mean, I'm sure getting radio play doesn't hurt, but I mean, there are other ways to get your music out there to the people. And, you know, and
there's so many ways. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
You know, it is tough to strike through all the other bands sometimes because there's so many, but the fact that you're not reliant upon some radio station going, oh, I hear a hit or I don't hear a hit, you know, I mean, that's gotta be empowering to a degree.
It really is. And it makes me think of the most recent Fiona Apple album, Fetch the Bolt Cutters, which is, I mean, that came out at the perfect time, I think, but also that's not an album you listen to and you necessarily hear a single or you hear a hit or something you can sing along to, but it's really powerful and really spoke to a lot of people. And I think that is more important right now, at least to us, than, you know, writing a single or writing a hit or trying to follow the rules. It's just being loyal and true to yourself more so than anything else.
And we are in a world where, I mean, I know that the singles and the EPs and this, that stuff is being consumed now instead of full albums to a large degree. I'm really hoping that swings the other way again, that people really want to hear full albums.
I hope so too. I, you know, with the resurgence of vinyl over the last 5 years or so, I'm hoping that's the case. And then also, I mean, people are selling cassette tapes again, which is crazy to me because I don't know how they play them. I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, so funny. I went to St. Vincent's site the other day to order her new album and her cassette tapes are sold out. And I was just like, really? That's amazing. But to me, that means, you know, with tapes or vinyl, you can't skip through things. It means people are not just downloading one song. They want to hear the whole story. And so I hope you're right. I hope it comes back around. And then artists create that way too, where it's really an entire story you're telling and every song is part of the picture. It's not just that one track. Of course, like, everyone's attention span is shortened these days. You know, we binge watch shows and we have Spotify and we listen to singles and playlists, but I think there's a solid group out there that appreciates the long form, and hopefully that comes back and dominates again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing I love, especially about the LP, besides just the music tone and like that sound that you get, but it's also the fact that there's only a limited amount of music that you can put on. So it's not like you. A lot of bands, you know, when they go out and it's just like, oh, we're going to put out 17 songs on this album. And I listen and I'm like, you probably could have thrown 5 or 6 of those out. But
yeah.
on an LP, like, you're throwing those 5 or 6 out and just putting the best music on that.
Yes, I agree with that. And there is a singer who I will not name who recently has put out a lot of music. And I was thinking, you know, instead of 22 songs, maybe you could have put out like 11 really good ones, or, you know, you could have spent more time on these other ones and really developed and dug deep, as opposed to trying to just put out as much work as possible. That being said, I do think streaming services like Spotify make that hard. I even for bigger artists, it's kind of like you need to put out as much as possible to see any reward. Putting out 11 good songs doesn't really break the bank in the end for you. But in the end, I agree. Quality, not quantity. Please. Please.
Well, yeah.
It's ridiculous, though, what you're getting paid from those streaming services. It's just, to, you know, for us people outside of the music industry, and we hear how little that, you know, a stream will generate for an artist. It's insane.
It is, and it's really a double-edged sword, because you do reach a lot of listeners that way. I mean, we have our stuff on Spotify because we're going to reach people that we otherwise wouldn't, which is great. I mean, and someone likes your song, you get on a playlist, and, you know, I'm understanding more how all the algorithms work, but again, it's all exposure bucks, and it doesn't really help you pay the band or help you pay for the recording or anything like that. So it's a tough situation we're in right now. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. How can we make this better so everyone it's lucrative for everyone, and not just we're breaking our backs for streams. If I could pay my rent in streams, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
But I can't, so.
Only a few people can.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we've taken up as even a little bit more time than we were supposed to have with you. So this is our chance. We want to give you a chance to tell everybody, you know, where they can keep up with Lizzie and the Makers, and get all the latest information about the album. Anything that you want to promote, this is your opportunity.
Well, now after I talked trash about Spotify, you can find our single on Spotify. Please stream it and like it, download it. But we're also on iTunes and basically all the streaming services. If you want to follow us on Instagram, which is just at Lizzie and the Makers, we post about all of our releases there, our videos, cool footage from our recording sessions and upcoming shows that we have. And yeah, our next single should be out probably in 2 to 3 weeks. So stay tuned for that. And eventually we will have vinyl and CDs available for purchase on our website, which is lizzieandthemakers.com.
All right.
It's also a great place. If you're more of an HTML guy, you can find all that stuff there too. So
awesome. Even awesome. Better. That's the way, that's a little bit more the way we work.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
We're old school, new school, I guess. I don't know how that works, but.
Well, nice. Maybe I'll make some cassette tapes too. For you guys.
Cassette. That one blows my mind.
Yeah.
That's the cool thing now is tapes. It's all coming full circle. So
I wonder if people are even listening to them, or if they're just keeping them as collector's items.
You know, that's a good question. I'll do some research, and then on the next call, that can be our starting.
We'll start
point.
With that.
Yeah.
And, well, first off, we'll give everybody an update on, you know, how well the ravishing of your friend went.
Right.
Because you know, I'm a giver. I don't think about myself very much. And
perfect. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, Lizzie. Well, thank you so
thank
much
you
for coming
so
on the
much
show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. This
been
was
a great
so
time.
Much fun.
And I urge everybody to go out and listen to your music, because it's there's so much going on, and it's well worth a listen. So thank you so much, and all the best.
Thanks. You too, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
stop.